I'm away from home a lot. In fact, right now I'm running to a lunch in Manhattan, and I feel better knowing that my Simply Safe system is back at home watching. Like last week, I was out of town, an important package was left on my porch, and because I got the Simply Safe alert, I was able to call my neighbor and ask him to grab it. Package saved, crisis averted. But Simply Safe does more than just help preempt porch pirates. The problem is that most alarm systems only react after a break-in. By then, it's too late. The bad guys are already inside. So Simply Safe has solved that problem. Instead of being reactive, they're proactive. Their AI-powered cameras spot threats before they reach you, and then their trained team jumps in, confronting the intruder and contacting the authorities. Instead of constantly watching your doorbell camera, you can put your phone away and sit back knowing that your home and family are actively protected. I love a clear solution to a big problem. If you do too, then check out Simply Safe. You can try it for 60 days with a money-back guarantee, and there are no hidden fees or long-term contracts. Right now, Problem Solvers listeners like you can save 50% on a Simply Safe home security system at simplysafe.com/problemsolvers. That's Simply Safe, SimpliSafe, simplysafe.com/problemsolvers. There's no safe like Simply Safe. From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show that solves entrepreneurs' toughest problems. I'm Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, and each week I take a problem that you're probably dealing with and get tactical solutions from people who have been there and solved that. So, let's get solving. If I've learned anything from working in media for the past two decades, it is this. If you're just trying to sell content, you are dead. D-E-A-D, dead. Why? Because content is hard to monetize. It's hard to distribute. It's hard to get and hold people's attention. And it requires constant new. Every day, something new. Imagine having a business where your product needs to change every day, like reinvented from scratch. And you're never 100% sure if your audience will like the thing that you made today versus whatever they liked yesterday. This is a crazy business. Why would anyone get into this business? I ask people that all the time when they talk about media, but that is why I have long been fascinated by Dear Media. Dear Media is technically a podcast company, but it thinks much bigger than that.
Dear Media is, on the front surface, the largest female podcast network probably in existence, but we say that the Trojan horse into media was audio.
This is Michael.
I'm Michael Bostic. I am the founder and CEO of Dear Media.
And Michael's thesis is this. Don't think of podcasts as the end goal. Think of podcasts as the starting point. Because if a podcast host develops a big following, then they can build a huge business on top of themselves. And Dear Media can help them do it and profit alongside them.
You know, some of the best businesses are kind of like selfish businesses in a way. My wife, Lauren, and I started a podcast in 2016 called The Skinny Confidential, him and her show. And it was just an audio show. There was no video component. There was, you know, no social element. There was no short form. It was just straight up long form audio. And we joined a company and quickly realized that they were kind of underserving the ability for us to scale the way we wanted to. So when we left, we said, hey, these things are not just audio shows. They're shows. They need to be video, they need to be short form, they need to be long form, they need to be audio, they need to be in newsletters, they need to be on blogs, they need to be syndicated across every relevant digital media platform. And they're really just the launch pad to do a lot more, not just in media, but beyond, in commerce and live events and books and streaming and you name it. So we kind of set out to build that space.
And by the way, I was actually just on that podcast that Michael and his wife, Lauren, host. It is called The Skinny Confidential, Him and Her Show. You should go check it out. I was on just a couple of weeks ago. It was a really great episode. Great time talking with them. I'm very impressed with how they run it. So Dear Media is their articulation of that big idea he just shared. And they're doing it at scale, not just for themselves, but for others in the creator economy too. They identify talent who can draw an audience and then help them build out that foundational show, you know, the podcast that's also video and short form and blogs and all that, and then help them strategize the bigger picture. How does the show become a larger business platform? Where do products fit in? What about other forms of media? And in turn, Dear Media then becomes a place for talent to scale exponentially. It has 100 shows, making it a full creator economy ecosystem. And I wanted to know,
What does that look like strategically? What process are they going through to look at someone with a podcast and say, okay, you could do this and then this and then this and then build out a brand that is far larger than just some podcast ever could be? And so that is what Michael and I are talking about today. If you are interested in the creator economy or just how to scale media or how to think differently about monetizing attention, this is a great conversation. We go deep into how media works, and he walks me through some case studies from inside the world of Dear Media. And that is all coming up after the break. The tech hiring tip of the week is brought to you by Indeed. 73% of tech workers rank flexibility, hours, location, even workload, as one of the top benefits that they value most. If your job ad doesn't highlight flexible policies, you're cutting out 3 in 4 candidates. Finding the right tech talent isn't just hard, it's mission critical. But with niche skills, hybrid preferences, and high salary expectations, it's never been more challenging to cut through the noise and connect with the right people. That's where Indeed comes in. As the number one site where tech talent applies for jobs, Indeed gives you direct access to over 3 million U.S. tech professionals, 86% of whom have applied through the platform. Indeed isn't just a job board, it's your tech hiring partner. From enhanced sponsored jobs to the tech network and smart sourcing tools, Indeed helps you reach candidates with the right skills at the right time, backed by data and AI. More quality applicants, less time to hire, and targeted tools that align with what tech candidates want, like flexible work options, career growth, and salary transparency. The data speaks for itself. If I needed to hire top-tier tech talent, I'd go with Indeed. Post your first job and get $75 off at indeed.com/tech talent. That's indeed.com/tech talent to claim this offer. Indeed, built for what's now and what's next in tech hiring.
In June 2024, a teenager attended a music festival and never returned.
Miles and miles away from where he was staying, up a mountain.
He wasn't gone 3 days and turned into Pablo Escobar.
The online sleuths had lost sight of this was somebody's son.
The disappearance of Jay Slater on Channel 4. Stream now.
All right, we're back. I'm talking to Michael Bostic of Dear Media about turning people and their podcasts into full-blown brands and businesses. And I started by asking him, why audio? Of all the ways to build a name and a foundation today, why does he still believe that podcasts are a great platform for that?
Well, the spoken word is, you know, one of human beings' oldest forms of communication, right? It's how we tell stories. It's how we connect with people. It's how we get our points across. It's how we learn things. And so I think innately people are just receptive to this medium in general. They want to listen. They want to hear. I think it's one of the only places you can truly get to know creators and people that are speaking on a mic, because you can curate content here on a blog or on a 60-second, you know, short form video content, or, you know, 15-minute cut down edited version. But when you start talking on a mic week after week, day after day, for long periods of time, you can really have deep conversations and you really start to learn how someone thinks, how they feel, why they think the way they think, why they feel the way they do. And so I just think that it is such a great way to build trust and engagement with that end consumer or that end audience. And so that's why we chose.
And it also, I think in your answer there, you're reflecting this really interesting shift that I don't know if enough people are fully appreciative of, but let me tell you this interesting moment that I had as a guy who bridges these two worlds, traditional media and creator economy in some way. Okay, so years ago, we had Gary Vee on the cover. And this might have been 2017, I don't even know. And I thought that that story, when it went online, was going to blow up. And you know what? It didn't. And that is not because Gary Vee is an uninteresting guy. He's a very interesting guy. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized that the reason that story didn't blow up is because people get all the Gary Vee that they need directly from Gary Vee. Like, they didn't actually need an intermediary to tell them about Gary Vee. They're getting him all the time. He's got a podcast. He's got every other thing. And what you're identifying is really that the more in which a person can develop a direct channel to their audience, the more invested those people are in that person. And then those audience's consumer interests will just shift to whatever's directly coming from the person instead of what is coming through what is perceived to be an intermediary. So if you build the business in a way in which it feels like it's coming from that person, then the audience is much more motivated to engage.
Yeah, 100%. And someone like me who does not come from traditional media platforms and had no background in media or in entertainment, 30 years ago, it would be next to impossible for me to do what I do now with my wife and reach the audience that we reach, right? I think like this medium in particular and the way that you're able to engage and reach that end person right away, cost effectively, basically afforded me the business that I have now and the living that I have now. And, you know, one of the things that I do running Dear Media as a CEO is that is a great pitch for people that do come from traditional media. What I tell celebrities or creators or people that come from reality TV is like, this is your mouthpiece that you control without any producers, without any kind of person in between, without any editing, without any filter. You can speak directly to this audience in the way that they or you see fit in a one-to-one way without having a bunch of people in the middle.
All right. I'm excited to dig into some of the examples of how you build people's brands, because what you just said there is at once true, but ... right? Which is to say that you're telling these creators, these celebrities, be authentic. And a thing that I think a lot of people who are trying to live in the creator economy, to understand the creator economy, the thing that they get frustrated by, frankly, I think is hearing over and over again, well, it's just about authenticity. But in truth, it is really about authenticity plus strategy. And the strategy is often very hidden from people, but that is what you guys excel at. And so I'd be very interested in hearing you articulate how you start to craft that strategy. And then maybe we can dig into a case study or two about how you actually execute it.
Sure. Yeah, I think the advice on being authentic was maybe relevant 5 or 6 years ago. It was like when people were starting to get into this and it's like, hey, it's not curated any longer. You have to kind of let the walls down. It's not scripted. Yes, you got to be authentic. I think now, like, I think if somebody came to me and they were like, well, I'm planning on not being authentic, like, I would say that's probably not the best place to start. It's kind of like someone saying, you know, I want to work for you. And like, what are your qualities? Like, well, I work hard. It's like, well, that should be
stakes. Kind of like,
it's table stakes. Yeah. So table stakes is authenticity. But you're right. I mean, when Lauren and I started this medium in 2016, it was very easy to stand out. I mean, hell, back in those days, people would look at me and say, like, what is a podcast and what are you doing? And I remember we used to create video graphics that you could put on social media platforms with a screen share or like a screen record showing where on your phone the podcast application was. Like, it would be like, it's that purple icon, you click it. Early days, it was a lot easier to stand up a show like ours with very little competition. You know, it was like, you know, the Tim Ferriss's, the Rich Rolls, the Joe Rogan's, the Serials, you know, early days of this medium is very hard to monetize. And now, you know, it seems everybody has a podcast, which is great for me. And everybody is jumping into the medium. But it requires a lot more strategy now, right? Like, you have to come in with a real perspective. You know, you have to come in with something that's different. Yes, you have to be authentic to yourself and give your audience a little bit more of an inside look on who you are and what you're really passionate about. Those are table stakes. But as it relates to strategy now, we're really thoughtful on what the go-to-market strategy looks like, what the guesting looks like. You know, we get down to figure out what is the studio, what's the cover art, we figure out what positioning, what brands, you know, what does this thing actually want to be turned into down the road? Is it a product line? Is it a live events business? Is it going into a streaming show? Like, what is the end goal for that creator? And then we really jump in with production support saying, like, hey, like, how do we, you know, make this, how do we indicate that this is a project that is that you're taking very seriously, that is not a side business or a side channel. This is like a very big focus for your brand or your business. And then, yeah, we put a lot of stuff in place. Happy to get as granular as
you like. I'd like to. First of all, what you just said there is super interesting. And I want to unpack one point of it before we move forward, which is the distinction that you were drawing between the benefits of being an early mover in this space and what is required now. Everybody who has an interest has at least 20 different podcasts to listen to, which means that if you are not entering a market, whatever it is, podcast, newsletter, social, with a really clear articulation of the thing that you are doing for a hyper-specific audience, like what utility do you serve in their world, then there is just simply no way to break through. It's like it's a niche game now, not a wide game. First of all, do you think I'm right about that?
I think you're 100% right. It's funny. I wear kind of two hats every day in my world. I wear the hat as a host, mm-hmm. where I'm doing a show that you've been on. You did great Thank on, you. By the way. Where I get to talk to people all the time, and there's an entertainment element, and there's being curious, and there's carrying a show and making sure that's in. And then the other hat that I really, spend most of my time wearing is running Dear Media as a CEO. And part of that job requires me to be very intentional and specific about who we sign and the talent we work with and the dollars that we put up against those new shows or those new properties. And I will tell you, and without naming too many names, that we've met a lot of really big entertainers or celebrities or creators over the years that have huge platforms and other mediums that just don't translate into this medium. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing wrong with them. It's just, it doesn't just because maybe you have a big blog or a big Instagram account doesn't mean that you are right for carrying a long form talk show. Just because, you've done well in one area of media doesn't mean that necessarily, maybe you're used to being interviewed and now you got to be the interviewer. It's a different,
totally different, skill set. Thing. Yeah.
I actually feel a little bit more uncomfortable doing this because I'm so used to interviewing people. I think I'm a better interviewer than an interviewee, if that makes sense. Because I have more hours and repetitions.
First of all, the difference to me, for what it's worth, about being a host versus being a guest is that being a guest is far less predictable. You don't exactly know what the host is going to say. You don't know what direction it's going to go in. You almost have to carry more optionality in your head at the same time. So when I'm on your show and you guys are asking me a question, like I'm flipping through my head as fast as possible. Like, what's the right answer to this? What direction do I go? What story do I tell? Whereas if I'm the host, I know that I'm basically in control. I can drive it. So it's like, it's an easier role in many ways. So I'm curious what you look for. Let's leave aside like talent. Let's just say somebody's good on mic.
Sure.
What are you looking for to say this is somebody that we can build around?
I'm looking for somebody first and foremost with a point of view. And I know that's broad, but they have to have a strong point of view. They have to feel a certain way about something, whatever they're passionate about, and they have to really kind of like stick to those convictions. We've at this point we have 100 shows, but we've probably over the years have signed 200, like some make it, some don't. And what I've found, the ones that don't really make it are the ones that kind of play the middle of the road. It's like they're not really opinionated. They don't really have a point of view. They're kind of playing it safe. They kind of, whichever way the wind's blowing. So first and foremost, like, what's your point of view? And it doesn't have to be a point of view that we agree with. It just has to be a point of view. Then I think there has to be you have to be an entertainer, right? Like it's important to realize that you are doing a show that is for the purposes of either educating, inspiring, or entertaining someone. So you have to have that thing. I don't know how to describe it, but everybody kind of knows what we're talking about. They just, someone that has that thing where you can look at and be like, oh, that person's going to be someone. And then I think beyond that, it's someone that has a very long outlook on what they want to happen in success. Meaning, like, if someone comes to the door and they says, hey, I want to do this for 5 or 10 episodes and I want to make a bunch of money because I saw somebody else doing it. Like, we're typically like, hey, we're not the right fit. If somebody comes and says, I want to speak to this audience because I think this audience deserves this, and then one day it's going to turn into this or that, and this is the way I'm going to get there. That's what we keen into, because we want to be helpful partners along the way. And obviously it's great to produce a successful podcast and monetize it in the way podcasts and podcasts are monetized. But really, like, we're interested in what does the brand look like in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years down the road? And that's what we're looking for. From a network perspective, we have a ton of data, right? We have 100 shows. We see what's working. We see what's not working. And we're really in tune with the audience. So we may look around and say, okay, doing really well in pop culture, doing really well in health and wellness. Hey, guess what? Our audience, a lot of them are becoming new moms. Like, we don't really have enough in parenting. Like, who's the best in parenting? And like, what topics can we cover? Now we're saying, okay, like, what does financial literacy look like for the audience that we serve, which is primarily that millennial woman? Yeah. And so we're able to kind of like go through the data and see categorically what we're missing. And then we go and try to find the best person in that space with the strongest perspective that wants to build a long-term brand.
So here is something you sort of said, but I wonder if you would double click on if I put it in front of you, which is hyper-specific value to a target audience that's underserved, mm-hmm. which is something you said, but let me give you the example that's in my head. And that's Lenny Rachisky of Lenny's Newsletter. So
But what's really interesting is at this point, Lenny's newsletter, for those who don't know, it's like the largest business newsletter on Substack. Lenny's newsletter has crossed the million subscriber mark, which is insane. But the way he did it was that he launched a thing for product developers. Like, it was so hyper-specific. And once he earned their trust, he was able to ask, well, okay, well, what else are they interested in? And eventually he got to the place where he's kind of a broader business publication at this point. But he started in this really specific niche way that I don't know anybody would have ever said, oh yeah, Lenny, you can build like a million subscriber newsletter off of product developers, but they could. So I'm wondering with you, if you guys think the kind of niche and expansion like that, right? Like new moms is one thing, but then maybe also like new moms in their 20s who live in the Midwest is like another thing, right? Or like something that's like really specific. And then you get like a wedge in as a creator and then try to expand from there. Do you approach it like that?
Yes. And this may offend some people, but my eyes glaze over when I start a new meeting with a talent or their agent and they say, hey, I'm going to be the next version of like a Joe Rogan, or I'm going to be the next Mel Robbins. And like, and listen, I understand the comparison because these two people that I mentioned have tremendous success in the space. But what I always tell them is like, those people are already those people and they're already huge and they're doing well. What I try to push people towards when they come through the doors of Dear Media is like, what is the niche? And start there. And then over time, as you build the audience and they get more interested, then expand into different categories. Like Lauren and I have said for probably a decade on our show, it's an upside down triangle. It starts very narrow. In our case, it started as building a brand and a business online and taking audience questions. And like for the first 30 episodes, just answering those. And then over time, yes, we introduce more of our relationship and we introduce more of guests. And then we kind of, now we're into so many different categories, it's insane, but that's 1,000 episodes in. In the beginning, it was very narrow, very niche. And I think that's still in any online medium, the best way to stand out. I think if you're coming in to the internet in any kind of door, and your strategy is to go wide and reach everyone, you're going to end up reaching no one.
Right. Yeah, it's true. If anybody is listening to your show, they would be insane to try to copy your format. Like your format makes no sense as a new show. Really, like you're one day it's wellness, the next day it's business, the next day it's like, it's just, there's no way you could do that. It's talking to too many audiences. You can only do that by earning that audience over time.
Yeah. And you know, and you're 100% right. And what happens when you earn that audience over time is they may say, hey, like we get feedback all the time where it's like, I would have never chosen to listen to this person. It wasn't, you know, something that I thought I'd be interested in, but because we've listened to you or watched you for 10 years, we want to see why you found it interesting to talk to this person. And so you kind of, that's what happens, but you're 100% right. In the early days, if you had some of the we had a conversation one time with a woman that was kidnapped by the Somali pirates and rescued by SEAL Team 6. It's a very interesting episode.
Yeah.
It did very well. The audience loved it. But if I said, hey, I'm going to launch a business podcast and that's going to be episode 7, people would say, like, what are you talking about?
Right.
You know what I mean? And so again, like this is a decade in, but early days, I always say, like, what do those first 10 episodes look like and who are they serving? The more niche, the better, honestly, in my opinion.
Right. Because at that point, what the product has become is your sensibility. Like that's what you're describing there. People are like, well, I'd like to see what Lauren and Michael found interesting about these people, because at this point, the reason I'm listening is because I trust them. But at the very beginning, it can't be about you. It has to be about the thing you serve.
Yeah. And we take the same approach with Dear Media, to be honest. That my thought with Dear Media is that, let's take show specifically, like I may win Jason's ear or eyes because I introduce you to a business podcast. Mm-hmm. But as you start to gain trust of the platform of Dear Media, just similar how Netflix does, you might also like, or YouTube does, right? Then you might see that pop culture or wellness. You're like, you know what? Because I trust this company and what they serve me already, maybe I will take a chance on those others. And that's how we think about serving new content to our audience. It's like, what are we kind of missing and how do we gain their trust in the first place?
All right. Then you said this one other thing that I want to double click on as a means of getting into a case study, which was that you said that you're also thinking about what this can become at the very beginning, which is really interesting. And I think not something that a lot of people think about. So you're trying to game out a roadmap of sorts at the start of something. So maybe, could you pick a show or a personality with a show and talk to me about how you would have forecast that at the beginning and then what you actually did to get there?
Yeah. So I'll pick on my show first, and then I'll pick on another show that we produce, just because it's an easy example to pick on myself. So when Lauren and I started our podcast, The Skinny Confidential, at the time, and this is how old we are now, we thought that more listeners would equate to more blog readers, right? We're like, oh, if people listen to the podcast, they're going to go into the blog. And what we envisioned was by increasing the blog traffic, that would one day get us the more eyeballs to then eventually get more clicks to a product line that she eventually did launch, right? And we thought, okay, the more traffic, the more engagement, the more trust, the better, then we'd be able to build our own brand and our own product line. And with that product line, we'd be able to have our own kind of like media business and consumer brand, which we end up doing. Little did we know that kind of like it flipped the other way and the podcast became the thing that then led to the product line. But there was always a roadmap with her and I saying that we want to be more than just media. In our case, we wanted to launch a consumer brand. We wanted to be investors, which we are now in many other brands. We wanted to have a platform like Dear Media where we could help other creators and invest in their brands. But it started, there was never an intention with her and I to say like, we just want to be podcasters. Mm-hmm. We, as a matter of fact, we never even cared about monetizing the podcast for the first 2 or 3 years. It was really just a hub to do the other things. And so I think like that intentionality and that North Star led us to be able to then create Dear Media, to work with other talent, to help them start their brands, to invest in her consumer brand, which Dear Media was a lead investor, and then have her product line. In relation to that, we work with, there's a show called The Toast. When we started working with them, we found a phenomenal show. We thought, okay, they could do more with video. They had ambition to launch their own business, which is, in this case is called Spritz Society. It's a canned cocktail. Dear Media and Lauren and I both invested in that. The network helped stand it up and support it. They're doing more in live all the time. So that's another example of like, there was more than just serve. Of course, we sell their ads and we're their media partner, but how can we also help them build their own business? As we think about other creators, the way that we talk to them is we say, okay, in success, when this show works, what else do you want to do? I've seen so many businesses lose creators or celebrities to other platforms because they're not saying, hey, let me be your first stop. When you want to go build that business, or you're looking for an investor, or you want to take your show on the road, or you want to write that book or create that TV show, they typically go outside of their partner into somewhere else and kind of start from square one. So for us, we say from the beginning, like in success, we want to be your first stop. At least bring the idea to us and let's see if we can help you. And so we get excited about working with people and basically using the hub to drive the success of those things, but then using all of the other channels to also drive success and awareness as well.
And what are you actually doing when somebody brings you the idea? Like, you don't, because they signed with you as a podcaster, doesn't mean that you then, you know, own future rights to their businesses. So are you investing in it? Like, how does Dear Media actually help amplify all that?
So first, one of the things I noticed with a lot of, I guess, the people that they would call Dear Media competitors, and I was signed to one of these companies early days of my show, is they say they're going to do a lot of these things, but what you find out quickly is there's like maybe an ad sales team that's got a very myopic focus on, you know, selling CPM audio ads, and a studio, in many cases kind of poorly lit, you know, ugly studios, just saying. And so that was kind of it. But they come in saying like they're going to build and market and network effect and give you all these impressions and build your brand. Lauren and I had that experience and realized like it really was on our back. Like, you know, the sales team wasn't so great. The studios weren't so great. We had no help for social syndication or video or even a thought to that. There was not one mention or idea about supporting us in any other endeavors or even thinking about it. And so again, selfishly, we said if we were going to have a business and we were going to partner with someone, we want these things for ourselves. So when we set out to build Dear Media, I said, okay, we got to be fully vertically integrated. We have to have all of the things that a basic company in our space would have. Yes, great studios. Yes, great video, lighting, sales, all that. But additionally, we don't want to just be focused on the audio. What does selling into video look like? What does selling across all of the channels, the digital channels, look like? When they want to build their own business and brand, we want to be their first stop. And yes, we want to be able to write a check as a typical VC or an investor. Let's take it a step further. Instead of just writing a check, we want to help them put ops and logistics in place and marketing. We don't want to just say, hey, here's some impressions. We want to say, these are the channels that will market your brand and stand up your show. We did a co-publishing deal with Simon & Schuster at one point for one of the hosts that we produce for a book. And we became the marketing arm of that project and made it a New York Times bestseller because, as you know, authors are going on these shows regularly. So again, we want to be brought into the conversation early and not just say, yeah, we can produce your show and sell. We want to say, we can invest, we can help you with logistics, we can help you with your supply chain, we can help you with marketing, we can actually help you like syndicate your channel across all relevant digital and offer those services. And funny enough, you know, I think a lot of creators now are moving away from the, you know, you own me forever model. You've seen that happen with a lot of people where they get in those contracts and get their IP back. We win business over by just offering best in class services so that the creators or the celebrities, we're a real value add. And one of our, the last thing I'll say is when people come through our doors, I tell them right up front, I'm not interested in tapping into anything you already have. I'm only interested in tapping into in the things that we create further. And so we should just always be a value add. And I think that's the real pitch in the sale.
It's interesting. I mean, it's somewhat like, not exactly, but somewhat like almost a venture studio model. I mean, you're essentially saying we will help you both as an investor and also provide operation support to help build the thing that you're building. And then you're going to build it with us and we're your marketing engine and then everyone wins.
Yeah. I mean, I would not say like, you know, I always distinguish that we're not a VC and we're not a private equity business, but you know, I am an investor in a lot of different businesses. I'm on a lot of cap tables. I advise on a bunch of them. Dear Media is private equity backed. I understand what it's like to both pitch and invest. And I think a lot of people, and Jason, you know this better than anyone, they position themselves as a strategic and then you get them on the cap table and it's like, hey, I can make an introduction here and there. When we say we're strategic, I mean, yes, capital and all those resources, but we also have 100 very focused channels that can give you significant growth for your business or your book or your brand. We also can become a significant media partner for the brands that we invest in that are maybe not creator led. Like, you know, one of the businesses we invest in is a company called Array. It's a female bloat supplement that has now gone into many categories. We were, you know, pre-seed investors of them. They have gone on, I think, now to Series A or B. You know, there's different businesses like Beekeepers Naturals or Spritz Society, like I mentioned, that we're on the cap table of. And, you know, we like to just not only write the check, but say like, look at all these channels and we're plugging you into a very dedicated consumer base.
You know what I love about hearing about all of this is that I feel like you are articulating the drum that I've been banging inside of traditional media for a long time. So let me tell you what that is, and then I'd just be interested in hearing your reaction to it. What I've been saying inside of traditional media for a long time is that every media brand that has thought of itself as a content producer will die if it doesn't move away from content as its primary product. Mm-hmm. I like basically stop trying to monetize your content because content is actually extremely hard to monetize. Like good monetizable content means reaching tons of people and then monetizing all of them a tiny amount. People would be shocked to see what CPMs are in podcasting, right? Which for those who don't know is basically like, what is the cost that an advertiser is going to pay per 1,000 people.
Unless it's a Dear Media CPM, then those are
high. I bet they are, because you have a hyper-targeted audience, so your CPMs are able to be higher. But for the average, like a programmatic ad that's running, so a programmatic ad, again, for anyone who doesn't know, is basically like an automatically inserted ad that you hear in an ad break on a podcast, and it's not the host anymore. It's like some random thing. CPMs are pretty low. And
yeah, we won't even do those here at this company because they're so low that they're honestly not even worth inserting.
So ultimately the old media model of reaching lots and lots of people and monetizing them all a small amount, I think is a losing game. And so I have been saying for a long time inside of traditional media where I've spent my career that the only way to win is to stop thinking of content as the product and start thinking of content as the funnel towards the product. And then you have to just figure out what that product is. And that's going to be different per publication. And frankly, some publications may never, ever figure it out. But the only ones that will be around in 10, 20 years are the ones that figure it out. So it's interesting to hear you having built this with that in mind. And the question, I suppose, is when you look at the media industry, what are you seeing?
Well, it's funny you mention it. I've had a hard time with media because, and even, you know, people ask about my competitors or what I think about what's going on in media. And the truth of it, honestly, is I pay very little attention to what's going on in media because I personally actually never even really set out to build a media company. I set out to build exactly what you're talking about, which was basically an audience and consumer aggregator of content that would then move product or services or eyeballs or whatever. And I had, you know, basically the flywheel that needed to be built was, we looked around, you know, early days and said, okay, female demos in this space are underserved. They're also the most valuable consumers. They're driving not only the decisions for themselves, but for the household and for their families and for their significant others. And there's a real opportunity to hyper serve them. And then off of that attention, launch our own consumer brands and services and products. And so the North Star again for us was, if you just built extremely valuable content with engagement and trust, you would then have the advantage to launch whatever consumer business or service made sense to them. And your advantage against other media competitors would be, well, they're all fighting over CPMs. We own the products and we own the services. So if somebody's not advertising, we're putting our own products in there and you're getting a much greater return on the consumer side. And you know this, it has gotten more and more competitive and more expensive every year to reach that end consumer on these third-party platforms. And again, our thought process, well, what if you didn't have that cost and you could just speak to these people at scale for free and share with them products that we've either built or are passionate about, invested in? And so the return that you get on those brands and on those products is so much greater. And then you just use, you know, you can use the advertorials as a supplementation of income and revenue. But I look at like, I look at that as kind of the cash flow lights on running the business. And I look at the real profit and the stuff that you actually own and control.
Michael, what would your advice be to someone who is building an audience, but doesn't exactly know what the hell to do with it, or just thought that building the audience by itself was the thing to do?
First, I would always say, like, you have to be realistic about the leverage that that somebody has over you. Like, if you're building an audience just for the hopes that one day you're going to get a bunch of ad dollars, I mean, look at what happened to in YouTube in general with programmatic and CPMs. There's multiple businesses that have been disrupted when those started to get more competitive or when those started to go down. So I would say that you have to have a strategy that is a long-term strategy that basically protects you from having a third party dictate your success. Meaning, like, if the only way you can be successful with an audience in media is from a third-party advertiser and there's no other way to be successful, I think that's a very precarious position to be in. That being said, you want to be able to work with those people, but you should have a long-term goal that also protects you and your downside and creates multiple revenue streams. You know, so for Dear Media, we're in the ads business. We're also in the live events business. We have our consumer brands. We just bought a tech platform where we actually have our own audience data. We get recurring subscription revenue and paywall revenue. And so as if ad markets get shaky for us, like, we don't like that, but we're not fully dependent on just that medium.
But let's just, I just want to, as a final thing to think about here, is just someone who's listening to this right now who has, you know, let's just say that they started a podcast and built a newsletter and they've developed a modest but not nothing following. And they're thinking, what am I supposed to do with this? Except I suppose I could run some ads. And like you say, that'll be a small amount of money and possibly diminishing returns. I could maybe try to funnel them towards my own product, but maybe I don't have a product. Like, I just, you know, it's like, what did I build this thing for? I think a lot of people who get into the creator economy in some way end up asking themselves, what did I build this thing for? Do you have some way of stepping back and saying, well, okay, let's understand who this audience is and what they want and how you can serve them? Like, what would you tell them to do?
Well, we talked about this on our show with you a lot. I would talk to the audience. I would speak to them directly. Lauren and I would tell you all the time, our show was built based on what the audience was asking for. Her product line was built based on the feedback we were getting from them, on what they were looking for from her. I think, you know, when creators build an audience and they say, I don't know what to give them now, it's because they're not talking to the audience. They're not asking them what more they want from them. And I think that's a huge mistake. Not just a huge mistake for creators, but, you know, on our podcast, we talk businesses that they're not in touch and they're not asking, what does the customer actually want from you? So, you know, it's really, like, for Lauren and I, it's been really easy to figure out what our audience has been looking for over the years, because we're in those DMs and we're in those newsletters and we're back and forth and we're communicating and we're seeing, oh, they like that or they dislike that. And it has informed basically all of the decisions along the way. And that's one of the greatest things about creating content in the way that we do now, right? If you were on network television 30 years ago, it'd be really hard for you to figure out what that audience was looking for, right? You'd have to do all sorts of surveys and all sorts of different things. You could literally put up a post on stories or whatever today and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing X, Y, or Z. Wait, what more do you guys want from me? You could put up a poll and say, I'm thinking about doing these four or five things. What would you find most interesting? You could do that regularly. We do it all the time.
Actually, I have found, and I wonder if you found any patterns in what it's like to survey those folks, but I found that if you ask people, hey, what do you want from me? They have absolutely no idea. But if you give them a couple things to think about or specific lists or options, then they will react and they'll be like, oh, I would trust you on that, or I'd be very excited to hear from you on that. Like, people don't know what problem you can solve for them if you just ask them. But if you directly engage them, then you will see what they are most excited about.
Yeah, I told you, you know, we acquired this tech platform Obey earlier in the year, and we are building a Dear Media owned application that we'll announce early in Q1. And we got a group of Dear Media viewers and listeners, and then we also have internal Dear Media team members. And our tech team is speaking to them on a regular basis, prompting them, saying, what do you think about this? We're thinking about creating this versus that. And we're bringing them into the fold early. So they're almost kind of co-creating what we're going to come out with in the future. And it's been incredible, because we don't have to sit there and fumble around in the dark wondering what they will like once we do it. And I think so many companies do that, where there's been many people that have entered this space in general, and many executives that think they have an idea about what this audience in particular is looking for, and they raise a ton of money and they launch it and nobody wants it. And said, how did that happen? It's like, well, you didn't ask to begin with. You know, you didn't see if anybody was actually even going to be interested in this service. And so I think it's so important.
Yeah. Michael, this has been so great. At the end of your show, you always basically just invite the guest to say the things that they want the audience to know about them. I will say Skinny Confidential, him and her podcast, is fantastic. I loved being on it. Also, I have just enjoyed so many of your episodes. So definitely listen to that. Anything else people should be thinking about or going to?
No, definitely check out the podcast, or, you know, it's available everywhere now, YouTube, audio, all audio platforms. And yeah, anything on Dear Media. If Skinny Confidential is not your cup of tea, there's 100 other shows, so you can find there. And definitely check out Jason's episode on our show, because Jason.
I appreciate that. All right, man. Great to talk to you. And that's our episode. Now let's keep the conversation going. I write a newsletter called One Thing Better, where each week I offer one new way to be successful and satisfied and build a career or company you love. You can find it at onethingbetter.email. That's a web address. Just plug it into a browser. onethingbetter.email. And if you get one of those emails and reply, it goes straight to my inbox and I will get back to you. Problem Solvers comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. The show is produced by Emily Holmes and Money News Network. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.